David.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, where we cover Georgia politics and Southern politics like Kudzu covers the South. Welcome, Tim.
Welcome, David.
Yes, well, we had a political week, event this past week that we've been looking forward to for quite a while, and I think it disappointed a lot of us.
Oh, yeah, it sure did. There's no use trying to put this thing in a positive light tonight. The Democrats pretty much got it handed to them. We got barely 28% of the vote in that district. I hate to beat a dead horse, but I still think you got to give the governor some credit for scheduling this election when he did. Clark County was half empty, and that coupled with a couple of minor Democrats getting 8% of the vote kept Mr. Marlowe out, but this is just a solid GOP district.
Well, we're talking about the 10th Congressional District over in eastern Georgia. You know, Clark County did, you know, do well for James Marlowe and Democrats in general, but there were other places where we didn't do well at all. Columbia County, obviously, we wouldn't expect to do too well there, but we still underperformed in Columbia and Richmond more than we anticipated. I mean, it was so bad, in fact, in those two counties. There were some majority black precincts in the southern end of the district that Jim White had won, which tells me the turnout was very abysmal. Putting a good spin on it, these numbers are actually worse. When you add the three Democratic candidates up, they did worse than Terry Holley did in the regular congressional race this past year in 2006, and that's not saying anything against Terry. That's not saying anything against the three Democrats that ran this time, but this is a race that had no governor's race at the top of the ticket where governor was, you know, popular for whatever reason at the head of it, and there was just downflow. This was all Congress, all federal issues, and even though we knew it was a GOP-leaning district, this district's not 70-30, actually 72-28. It's not that district. At least it wasn't that district going in.
No, John Kerry got 7 points better in the presidential election in this district than the Democrats actually did. You mentioned Columbia County. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that Marlowe got like 10% of the vote in this big county. That's just terrible.
I haven't worked out the percentages, but he got beaten 9-1 by Whitehead. You know, Evita Pascal did a pretty good job in that county. For her, she had 509 votes. That was just under half of what James Marlowe got. Paul Braun actually finished second in that county, and that's the thing. Paul Braun, while people said, "Oh yeah, well he won the second biggest, or not won it, but you know, he beat Whitehead handily in the Athens area." He was second place in almost every county, and so it was more thorough than that. And I talked to some insiders. I called around people that had worked in the district, lived in the district, and I said, "What did he do?" I talked to two people. They're like, he had a lot of signs, you know, and they had no real reason. I did finally talk to someone later in the week, and she said, yeah, he was sending out a lot of press releases and a lot of hits on things that probably got through to, you know, GOP activists, and those were enough to peel off enough of his vote away, and that's why he got all the vote, not Bill Green. But I still, would like to find out more and more about what Paul Braun did, because I kind of thought he came out of nowhere.
David, another group of folks that's got to be scratching their heads, and I'd like to really ask them, you know, how they feel about this. The state party invested some time and personnel in this district. How could they possibly feel after this abysmal Democratic turnout when they actually sent people over there to ensure a turnout?
Yes, and I'll tell you one thing. We just can't get around it. Traditional Democratic voters are just harder to motivate, and that's just the shame. So the job is a lot harder, I think, at the outstart for a Democratic turnout program than as opposed to a Republican turnout program. But, I mean, you have to wonder. I think it worked in the Athens area to a point, but it did not work, or either it was not, you know, utilized in the southern ends of the district where a good number of votes are, because, you know, like I said, we're getting beat in majority black precincts, democratically in precincts. We underperformed. I think I sent you a swing state project had a good string going on the list, and it showed how in Columbia and Richmond counties that we were down 10% in some precincts off of the Democratic vote. When you go from 30 to 20 in a box and overall Democratic vote, you're just not going to withstand that.
And so I've got to ask this question. Did the people that went over there to work this district just concentrate on what they knew would be solidly Democratic areas and not go to these other areas? Because it sounds as if there was no presence there. There was no organization on the ground.
I was told they went to a lot more places. I know the raw numbers that they phone banked, obviously you'd have to think that they were given calls throughout the district. I think the get out the vote was more than just Clark County and Oconee County. I mean, it was in other parts of the district. I'm not going to say they did every single county. I don't know. I mean, that's something they'll have to tell us. But if this was sold to us as this is going to be a blueprint we're going to use from for future, you know, years in 2008, then we have to come up with some new tactics, because, I mean, I'm not – what I heard, raw numbers did sound good. It's kind of like I'm a football coach. We make out a playbook, game plan. We come up with these plans. All the coaches say, hey, that looks great. But then if you get stuffed three and out over and over on your offensive playbook, you got to do something different. The results just weren't there.
No, they were not. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. All the pundits, were saying all along, we've got ourselves a runoff, folks, and Marlowe's going to be in that runoff, and Marlowe tonight is not in that runoff, even though he hasn't officially conceded. The few boxes that are out, you know, he's not going to make up this 187-vote difference or whatever it is. It's I don't want to use the word embarrassing, but I suppose I just did, didn't I?
Yes, well, and it's the thing is, earlier in the week it was 96% in, now it's 99%. I don't think you obviously, you know, the one resource in politics you can't buy and it's just as valuable as money is time. And even if he didn't concede and started running, he, you know, we've lost, you know, 5 days on the campaign clock, if you will. So I don't think there's any plan in that. And I think it's, personally, I'm not, I don't want to blame, you know, James Marlowe. I don't want to blame those two ladies for taking off part of the vote, because Democratic vote should have been higher than 30% anyway, so that shouldn't have mattered. I don't want to blame either strategist. I mean, I think some of the things, like, I think the mail was effective. The fact that they were able to do TV was good. That's something that, what, you know, we had TV this time, and we didn't have TV last time. And yet, there was no difference. And, you know, Bernita told us in the Athens area, or not Athens, in the Augusta area, they had a, you know, number of points behind the TV. I have to just, you know, kind of be a little depressed that the Democratic Party label in Georgia right now, outside of, you know, Atlanta, Decatur, some places like that, is just so, the brand, you know, name is so low that this is what we get. And that's very disheartening.
Well, let's move into that, if we will. David, where do you think right now the Democrats stand in Georgia?
We stand worse than I thought we did before. I kind of thought 2006 would be a little bit of a low watermark. We'd start to come up. I thought this was a chance for us to kind of have a little bit of renewal. I mean, I just can't believe that the Republican Party, you know, the Federal Republican Party, with the double talk, the scandals and the Iraq war all put together, that, you know, no solutions on health care and many other issues. I'd have to think that the people are getting wise to it. But then you see this race, and it shows that, you know, if nothing else, if you just took the raw numbers, the people are happier with the Republican Party at the congressional level. I mean, you had an incumbent, Charlie Norwood, who, from all the commercials, was wildly popular, against Terry Holley, who didn't have a lot of paid media. Terry gets 31%. Now we have, you know, a campaign that has a lot more, media behind it, has a lot of, you know, strategists behind it with James Marlowe. You add that two other candidates, and then all three together can't, you know, come to Terry Holly's vote. It's just you have a lot of questions to ask.
Well, I go back with this thing 6 years to 2001. I saw Ralph Reed in his early days as the chairman of the Georgia Democratic Party. He came up here to my home county with Saxby Chambliss, and he put on essentially a first-rate grassroots event with plenty of media coverage, and he used that model all over the state. Ralph Reed built the grassroots of the Georgia Republican Party where it did not exist before. We're getting outworked at the grassroots level in this state, David.
Oh, and I've got some stories I can tell you. But, Tim, you know what we could really use now? We've been talking about demographics of this district. If we had a trained demographer from, you know, a university like, say, Georgia Tech, I think that would be something we could really add to, to our show. Wouldn't that be a good time for that?
Oh, yeah.
Bernita, welcome.
Hello, Bernita.
Hi, this is a nice lead in there, Dan. We'll have to pay you $5 this week.
Well, we've been talking about the 10th Congressional. Tim and I are rather disappointed, to say the least. What is your reaction to it all?
I think I'm disappointed that we didn't even make 30%. I'm more disappointed about the numbers that of people that didn't come out. And I know the efforts that the party made. I saw some of their accomplishments and the number of, you know, the people that they contacted. And, you know, you just don't know, was it voter apathy? Was it that they're just so not used to wanting to be involved and not understanding the importance of this race? We didn't make it a big deal. Well, it didn't get that much media coverage unless it came first off the blogs and then it went to the media, to the mainstream media. Yeah. There's just so many things that I know that we could have did, and was it our big fight in the beginning amongst each other that hurt it?
Yeah, I don't really know that, you know, any kind of infighting between, you know, jockeying for possible candidates. I don't think that was the problem. I was telling Tim, I think the brand name Democrat in the state of Georgia right now is just not showing any recovery. I mean,
I don't know if we have a brand name, David. That might be where our problem is.
Yeah, well,
we have a name, but we don't have a brand nor an image.
Yeah, it's something's amiss. You know, we talked about how, you know, better media coverage, you know, better media tactics this time, and you have three candidates working. They can't total what Terry Holly did last time underneath a governor's race in which we had, you know, it was a wipeout against us. Just very disheartening.
Well, not only have the Republicans suddenly taken over this state by winning the last three elections, but we had all better believe that they're taking the necessary steps to make sure that they stay in the majority for some time to come. We've seen the redistricting and things like that. It's going to be a tough climb back. You know, everybody needs to know that, and it's going to take a while to do it, too.
Yeah. I'm going to tell everybody a little story why this really disheartens me. After these districts were redrawn, before they were redrawn, the 11th district was the most Democratic district held by a Republican. And I had a potential candidate that was actually looking at moving a little bit into our district to run. And I got to looking at the numbers, you know, tried to tell them the positive things about the district. But at the end of the day, I said, you know, I don't think if I was going to move, I would move into our district, honestly. I said, I would look at moving in the 10th. Because I looked at the numbers, and what somebody at the party at that time, but someone had taken the time to work at the party, had worked up the numbers, and I believe they were accurate numbers. They showed the 10th was by, say, 7 more percentage points than the 11th. It was by far the most Democratic Republican-held seat. And that means the 10th is the best of these, I believe it's 7 or 8 Republican-held seats out of the congressional seats in Georgia?
Seven.
Out of the 7, the 10th is the most Democratic, and that's the best it gets. And that is a scary thought.
do you guys think we'll get to the point, God forbid, where we cannot field good candidates in these congressional races in districts like this?
I think that's going to go back to our brand and our marketing.
Yes, I mean, you know, I think...
Why would you want to be in it if you know you're not going to get any support?
I think there were probably candidates, because apparently there were more candidates that thought about running. And there were probably candidates thought, maybe we'll see how this special election goes. You know, if James Marlowe gets to run off and he gets 45% or 42%, I know this all sounds like crazy talk now, but, you know, before last Tuesday it might not. If I'll just wait it out. He doesn't win, but he comes close, and it's somewhat competitive. I can run in 2008. Do you think there's anybody today that really is looking at the run because it's a great shot? Now, certainly there are people that are just true believers and says, you know, democracy deserves choices, and I need to run, and I think that's the way to run. But if somebody's looking at winnability, like sure thing shots, these results are tough.
Well, the obvious well-heeled, well-financed candidate we would be looking for would state the obvious, why run an exercise in futility, and they'd point at this race as a prime example of that.
Yes, I mean, you have to look at what your motivation is, and that's paramount, but this certainly has to be something that we have to work around in candidate recruitment, and I think if you talk about improving the Democratic Party for 2008, one of the first things you've got to do is you've got to recruit better candidates.
We've got to train our candidates, too.
Yeah. Well, Bernita, since you were in the district, maybe you can help shed some light. What did Paul Brown do? What did he do that the average voter didn't see outside the district?
I think he knocked on doors. I believe he was a door-knocking fool. He was just knocking on doors.
Yes, because I had even been told by somebody that he didn't have much staff.
No,
pretty much
he didn't. He just went door to door. He used the leverage he had in Athens, and he went into Columbia County and knocked on doors. And I think he ran a grassroots campaign, but a small one, not compared to, you know, like Whitehead, who had a full staff. He didn't have a full staff.
Yes. Yeah.
And he didn't get a lot of earned media either.
No, if you look at outside, if you didn't live in that district, I mean, I was just scratching my head. I mean, I could have seen Bill Green getting these numbers, because if you look at what Bill Green did on the internet and getting out the word outside of the 10th district, you know, Bill Green did a better job. But this goes to prove you can let people in other countries, other states, other districts know all about your campaign through the internet, but if you don't let your people know about your campaign in your district, you're dead. And this is somebody that does internet politics for a living saying it. So
this is true. Yeah.
Is there any, Bernita, there any way that Brown can make this thing competitive?
No. Not in his party. Because the nine largest counties that made up, I think they said 53% of the vote, have already started to support Whitehead. Now you get into the Republican machine. And so all of them are going to call out for Whitehead now.
Yeah. What do you, Bernita, what do you think, I know you don't live there just like we don't, what do you think the average Democrat, that, you know, just the kind of Democrat that just comes to any race there is, what do you think they do? Given the choice between two Republicans, do they vote for Brown just to, you know, muck up the waters?
No, I think they're staying at home.
Yeah,
no motivation to come out.
Oh, well, I mean, if you have to get motivated out to come to this, and you're a Democrat, you're not going. But if you're just the kind of person, I know one time, you know,
I think they would go with Paul Brown if that's the case.
Yes, I mean, I know myself. I mean, if there's a runoff for probate judge in my county, I mean, one time there was one of these, and I rode up in there, and the people were like, wow, and this is noon, you know, this is midday, like, wow, you're like the seventh person to vote today in this precinct. I mean, there are people like that that, you know, probably you and Tim are both that way. Y'all vote every time the polls open.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that there is a something out there. I believe Grayson Daughters has joined us. Or she was and then went away. Or there was a phone number I didn't recognize. It's Tim or Benita's. But please call back in if we've let you go. I guess until we're going to talk about the role of viral video, and particularly in the tents, but let's kind of save that in case Grayson, you know, is able to call back in. But we hadn't talked about the presidential race in a while, and it seems like just in the past, say, 2-3 weeks, Hillary Clinton's just kind of taken a commanding lead on our side. Do y'all get that sense?
Yes, I get that sense clearly.
Yes, I do, and I still think it's hers to lose at this point. Obama is a charismatic figure. He can raise a lot of money. He can stay in this race. But I still think it's Hillary Clinton's race to lose. And that Sopranos video, incidentally, was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, so we'll get back to that. I believe Grayson's come on with us. Grayson, are you there?
Yeah, hey, this is Grayson, excuse me.
Yes.
Hey, Grayson.
Hi, who's on the call?
This is Bernita and Tim on
okay.
with me.
Hello.
Hey, Bernita.
Hey.
Yes, well, we were talking about the 10th congressional race. And first, just to kind of lead in, give us your overall thoughts of what happened in the 10th.
Well, I think it was a little disappointing. Obviously, Marlo did all the right things. It was just, I think it's just too heavily a Republican district for him. But he came really close. And I think just coming out of the gate with no name recognition whatsoever, I think he'll be in a good position to do something else later on. I don't know what exactly that would be, but he's on the map now.
Yes, I mean, I just don't know there's a district that would lend to winning that he lives inside of. That's
no,
just,
he
the
lives.
Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's either held by a Democrat or it may be a tough climb. I mean, for instance, I guess he moved into the... I guess he lived in Lincoln County, which I don't know who lives in that state Senate district. But then if, let's say, he moved to Clark County, the seat that Jane Kidd ran so well in, she ran about as good as any Democrat can in that seat. So it's going to be hard to find the right district over in that area. Well, wanted to have you on and talk about viral video. There was a lot of viral video that went on in the tent, and a lot of it was produced very well. But then it's hard to say if it had any impact. What do you think about that, Grayson?
God, I know. I simply don't have the answer to that question. You know, it was done. It was effective. It certainly got a lot of press. Everybody wrote about it and talked about it. Did it have impact? You know, who's to say? It's just something that really can't. It wasn't measured. I mean, I think there could have polling done to find out people who were voting. Were you impacted at all? Did your vote have? Did viral video, did watching a YouTube video have any decision on your voting behavior or your voting procedure? I think some of those things we could have gotten some data from some pollsters, but it's just simply very hard to say right now since we don't have that kind of data.
And I get the sense there wasn't a lot of polling done in this race. If I had to guess, I believe Jim Whitehead's campaign had a poll, and I wouldn't be so sure there was a lot of polling done otherwise. I mean, you would think James Marlowe did polling based on who some of his other consultants were, but I never heard about any polling, and I got the sense that there really wasn't certainly any tracking polling, and I don't think any media firms did any polling.
No, I mean, there could be some, but I certainly haven't been made aware or found out any polling information. From the 10th, I would like to know. I would like to have known the impact of viral video on the race. I'm afraid it's still certainly a big mystery. And so I think that's only going to cause people to move forward with it. I certainly don't think that anybody's out there going, oh, well, gee, that didn't work. I'm never going to do that again. I really don't think that's the situation. I think it certainly piqued a lot of people's interest and curiosity in creating viral video and using it. And then hopefully at some point we'll be able to see if it does have an impact on our political process.
Yes.
We simply don't know.
And I will compliment you on, I believe I've seen two of your videos, and they're much better produced. They almost look like something that could be part of a newscast, maybe a niche newscast that cover politics, whereas others look like, you know, they're made with somebody's camcorder with almost a joke in mind.
Yeah, I have a news background, so anything I do, I like to think that I'm going to bring sort of a news style, a news package approach to just something quirky that nobody's going to cover. Like I did something with the debate, you know, nobody's going to spend a whole lot of time covering that debate, but I did about, you know, 2-minute package news style about that. I did something about the Jefferson-Jackson dinner. It's just an opportunity to go and cover something that we are interested in. Certainly all the politicos and the political junkies are all interested in stuff like that, and they enjoy watching that. You know, it's certainly not going to get a lot of coverage on WSB or WAGA or Athens Banner Herald, but we like to do it.
Yes, and I guess a lot of times the blogs, you know, our show, things like that, the people that really care about it, it's really serving a need for them, but I mean, just the average person that they vote, but they don't, you know, really do much more than that. It's hard to see them getting real motivated to watch or listen to these kind of things.
Well, yeah, exactly.
One idea that we could try is actually putting all our kids on video and putting it on a DPG website. So no matter where you look at, you would know who your candidate was.
Right. Well, that's a good thing about viral video, is it's not linear. It can stay there. It can be archived. It can
mm-hmm.
reside on anybody's blog, anybody's website. We can recycle it if we need to. It can be stored away on YouTube, and somebody may want to say if Marlo chose to run another race a year from now or Bill Green wanted to do something. Or, you know, it's still going to be there for people to go back and look at. To become familiar with the candidate again under different circumstances. So, I don't know. You know, it's just hard to measure right now all the impact of it. I certainly like to think it has an impact. We weren't just whistling Dixie, you know. But I think right now I would just say we're kind of preaching to the choir, or we're producing for the choir, I should say. We're producing for the peanut gallery. It's not like we're going to draw in a whole lot of new voters by doing this stuff, but we're pleasing the people who would ordinarily go out and vote, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I guess, and the one thing, viral video, it can, you know, feed a need, but it doesn't get out the vote. And we noticed that, particularly the south end of the district, in the 10th.
Sorry, my dog is running out the street. Hey, dog.
The voter turnout was rather low.
Was it? I didn't see any numbers on the actual turnout for the
yes.
tent.
We were down 10% in some precincts in Columbia and Richmond, I was told.
Well, that's well, we didn't seem to have much back there, did we?
No. I don't think it was expected to, but we're just talking about how online it just doesn't seem to, you know, necessarily turn out voters, which is a kind of a problem we had in this race.
I think it also depends on the market you're in. I mean, does that area have a high number of internet users?
Yeah. Although
compared to like the metro.
I'm beginning to think that, you know, internet usage is reaching the point that like TV is. I mean, so many people have it. And people that you don't expect to have it have it.
Oh yeah, if you're on dial up as one that I can tell you. I mean, you got to wait for a YouTube video to entirely play before you can really see it.
Yes.
So you got to really, you know, really want to watch it.
Yes, but and then I guess, you know, we can find statistics on that, but I think the number of dial-up users is even going down at this point. You know, more people...
Going down, you say?
Well, more people are using DSL and... cable.
Compared to people going to high-speed access. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, exactly. You know, we're really just at a ground zero, at a starting place. I think that the numbers, the impact, all that stuff, it's only going to go up from here. It's certainly, I doubt it's going to go down. People are not going to continue to, more people are going to be, will have access to broadband. More people will hear about viral video as we go forward. So this is just a jumping off place. This is a big experiment for us in terms of using internet in Georgia politics. And I like to be very optimistic and think, well, this has been a testing ground, and we're only going to see bigger and better things as we move forward toward 08. So,
yes, well, moving forward and looking forward, do you have a new project in mind? Or
not right now. I kind of, you know, I just sort of jumped in with the 10th congressional rather, and sort of made a lot of friends, made a lot of contacts. Bernita, for instance. And I think right now I'm just kind of taking a breather, and we'll kind of regroup. A lot of these bloggers, a lot of the video producers are going to sort of regroup, and then we'll sort of all, we know who each other, you know, who the players are now, and I think more people are going to become interested. The next race that we become interested in as well, I think we're going to just kind of lay low. We'll probably do a lot of post-morts, a lot of, you know, talking about over the next few months about what we did right, what we did wrong. And I think then as we move toward 08, certainly as we move toward the primaries, I think everybody will get re-energized to do some more cool things.
Yes, and I do think that a lot of times Internet activities do play better in a primary audience where both, you know, candidates for A, Democrat, and B, Democrat are highly motivated, and you're, you know, still fighting for motivated users as opposed to in a Democrat-Republican race, you're looking at going for swing voters who are less likely to look at these kind of things.
Yeah, that's just too tough of a nut to crack almost. And we're going to see some interesting uses where I think we're going to see some really people with some really great creativity. They're going to do some things that we haven't even thought of, and some different applications that we haven't even thought of. And I think people are just going to get real clever with it, and it could be a real driving force as we move forward. Like somebody's campaign eventually is going to hinge, is going to come down one way or the other on how well they manage their internet campaign. I'm convinced that's going to be the deciding factor as we move toward 08. So people certainly aren't going to give it less attention, and I think we'll eventually see the point. Well, they didn't have a good. For instance, their internet campaign failed on X number of levels, thus they lost the election. Eventually, I think people will be saying that. It's still too early to really get into it to that degree. But, I mean, everybody's going to have an internet campaign now. And
yes,
it's going to be viral video.
Yes, and I think the internet campaign is very important. It has its uses, although this 10th congressional race, honestly, was not a good one to say that, because you had probably the two best internet campaigns, as I could see, were Marlowe and Green, and they finished third,
right,
and I don't even know, respectively. And the number two candidate, he had a site that says visit our blogs, plural, and it wasn't linked to even one blog, singular. So
yeah.
That really didn't speak well of internet politics.
No, it didn't. And it, again,
they
I think
were just not in good for special election.
Yeah, the 10th was probably not the best place, but people were so anxious. I think they're so anxious to use the technology. They're so anxious to use their skills and their passions and their interests all coming together that they just jumped on any congressional race will do type of thing, and we just happen to have the special election. So I think people will become more focused, and I think no matter if they're the front runner, they're going to be paying more and more attention to their internet campaigns. So I think it's all good.
Okay, well, Grayson, thanks for joining us. And one final little aside, the fundraiser the Democratic Party of Georgia has coming up at a comedy club. Are you going to be performing at that, or just?
When is that? No.
You don't even know about it.
No.
Well, I just happened
to. No, I don't.
I know you had done some comedy, you know, on stage, and I saw
I have
that
done some
the Democratic Party
before.
Of Georgia this past week announced a $50 a head fundraiser at a comedy club, and I didn't know if they had talent they had recruited or.
They haven't called me, sad to say, to perform for that fundraiser. I guess they know better.
Yes, well, we were wanting to find out more about that that fundraiser as we go forward, but I just saw it in the last few days announced on the website.
I didn't get an email as a state committee member. I didn't get an email about it.
It's just on the website, on the front, but I'm sure we'll get Martin or someone else to tell us all about it.
Martin will fill us in.
Well, thank you, Grayson, for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, well, it was good to have more guests with more insight in particular areas. But I guess getting back the presidential race, I think it was a consensus Hillary Clinton's moved ahead in the race pretty firmly. Tim?
Oh, yeah. As I was saying before our guests came on, I thought this for a couple of months. I still think it's Hillary Clinton's to lose. I know that Obama, as I said, is a charismatic figure. I know that John Edwards, who also should have enough money to go the distance, has got this four-state strategy in which he needs to win one or two of either Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, or South Carolina. But, boy, that's putting all your eggs in one basket. This thing could be over before February 5th for him.
Yeah, I even heard that there's a rumor going around that when the next disclosure comes out that Bill Richardson would have outraised John Edwards for the second quarter, which, not that money's everything, but that sure is a interesting sign that Richardson would have passed him in any measure for the, you know, I guess the third spot.
Well, let me narrow this down further. I think John Edwards, because of the time, effort, and money he's put in there, absolutely has to win the Iowa caucuses, or he's done right there. Then Barack Obama becomes Senator Clinton's chief rival.
Yes, and one thing I think may happen is I had thought that, you know, that Barack Obama would stay close enough to Hillary Clinton where the campaign between the two of them could get nasty, and then it would, that would not be good for the party. Also, it would make it where there would be no way that he would take or be selected as the vice presidential nominee. But if Hillary Clinton takes a pretty commanding lead, it stays positive throughout for the most part, I could see a case where now she could pick him and he would be willing to take the vice presidency, and that could be a pretty powerhouse ticket.
Yes, it could. The reason I believe he hasn't been able to overtake her, David, is one factor. That's the experience factor. I know that early a lot of people were worried that Hillary Clinton might could win the Democratic nomination, but they were worried about her electability in a general election. Well, when they look at what's going on in the Republican end of this deal, they're not so worried about that anymore, I don't think. And the poll numbers are showing it now. People are coming home to her.
Yes, and I think John Kerry's race can, you know, some lessons were learned there as far as anybody that the Democratic Party puts up, the national GOP and the talk radio crowd and all those folks are going to attack them to where 35 to 40% of the people thinks they're the devil. It doesn't matter who we put up, they're going to do their hatchet job. And with Hillary Clinton, they've done their hatchet job already.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know that there's any, you know, any more damage that they can do to her.
Yeah, what are they going to say that hadn't already been said about her in the last 15 years? They've done everything but refer to her as the devil incarnate, and a couple of evangelicals might have done that.
Yes. Bernita, what are your thoughts on the presidential?
I completely agree. I think Obama's team has tried to attack Hillary, but they just have blundered every time they've tried.
And it's more in a covert way. It's not a upfront.
Well, except for, no, that last one they tried with the letter about the Indian Americans, and they tried to get it out to the press and say, don't associate it with our campaign. But that was a serious mistake because it came from their campaign.
Yes, but that's trying to be a little more covert. And now in today's, today's disclaimer world, if you want to do a, you know, if you want to run a spot or send mail, it's going to say paid for by. Your name's got to be at the end of the radio ad, the TV ad, when you say it. And so the upfront direct attacks, that's what I'm talking about.
No, I don't think he can.
No.
His team doesn't have the experience, and what are they going to attack her on? Like Tim said, what are you going to attack her on? You can't go for experience because she can nail any of them one by one about her experience, especially Obama.
Yes, I mean, they can try the electability game, but I think at the end of the day, John Kerry looked very electable in, you know, February, March of 2004, but by the time the Republicans got a hold of him, his one strength is Vietnam service, they used against him.
Yep.
Very unfair, but that's just the way that crowd operates, and they have...
And now even the news media has picked up on Obama, and they're like, he's a nice guy. And he says he's going to bring change about, but what you stand for?
Yes.
So finally, they've taken off the kid gloves on him and really looking at, you know, what's he going to stand for? mean, for example, they had a huge article about the coal industry in Southern Illinois. He was all for the coal industry when he was running for Senate, and he just decided not to vote on a bill that would have helped the coal industry but would have pissed off the environmental industry. And so he went with environment, but he didn't go strong enough. So, I mean, he keeps putting himself in these positions where he's trying to play both sides and not understanding either the game or his commitments that he made, his prior commitments to groups.
Yes, and I mean, he is young. It's not like, I mean, I've told people, there are scenarios where you can get Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, both as president in time. But if Barack Obama gets the nomination now, then Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Bill Richardson, this is pretty much their only shot because of their age, and certainly, you know, Edwards would have lost now twice. This is their one shot. Barack Obama's the one that's young enough and fresh enough. He'll get a second shot.
Yep.
So,
and a lot of people have wondered just that. I don't know how many people I've talked to that have simply said, for Barack Obama, it's too early.
He made a commitment to his constituents that he wasn't going to leave the Senate, and 45 minutes later, he changes his mind after only serving 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know that he expected to catch on like wildfire like he has within Democratic Party circles. I remember being at the convention, and you had heard of him, but I think there in Boston, his name ID, everything about him, even before he gave the speech, the keynote address, that was just where he took off and became such a household name so fast that that's why running for president in a serious manner became plausible. When he probably first started talking about running for Senate, running for president in just 2 years didn't even seem like a reality. So that promise is, of course, you want people to keep their promises, but I think that when he probably made the promise genuinely, he just had no idea that it was going to take off.
Yeah, no, he made that right before he announced.
Oh, okay. See, I was
thinking
earlier.
Yeah, he made that right before he announced.
Yeah.
There is an uptick, David. I don't know if you've seen the latest Newsweek poll, but the top three Democrats lead in every potential head-to-head matchup with the Republicans. That is the first time that has happened.
Now,
very good news.
Now, do all the Democrats lead against Fred Thompson among Law and Order viewers?
Well, I'm a Law and Order viewer, and I'm not going to vote for Fred. Fred is I'm not going to say the great white hope, as some of the talking heads have
said. He's that last white hope.
but it is interesting how he has just shot upward in the Republican polling to the point now that he's solid number two on their list, and he's leading in some polling. Fred Thompson actually leads in the polls in Nevada. Think about that. That's how desperately Republicans are looking for anyone new other than the field that they now have announced.
Yes, and I think I'm sure a lot of these people that are saying, I support Fred Thompson, they really don't know that much about him. They're just, they want something new. They don't like what they've got.
Right.
With some of these characters like Rudy Giuliani, I can't blame them. The guy goes against a lot of their core beliefs. I just don't know how they can stomach him. My personal dream scenario is Giuliani gets the nomination, and then the right wing just says, forget you, we're going to get our own guy, and, has the independent run by James Dobson or somebody that's just true to who they are. And, one, it would splinter their vote and assure us winning, which is the best thing. But secondly, it would really at least let them find out who they are. I've said it before on the show, I don't know why they need Fred Thompson, because if you look at who a lot of the Republican activists are, I think Mike Huckabee, the governor of Arkansas, fits the bill of who they are. And if obviously now we know governors of Arkansas can be president.
Right. Do you know, David, since January 20th of 1989, the core Republican voter has been looking for one thing, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Looking for a rock star.
They haven't found him yet.
Nope. They're still looking for that rock star.
Yes, right. We have a new caller joining us. Who do we have here?
Hey, Dave. Sorry I'm late.
Okay, and John, I didn't expect you to be calling from a 404 area code. I take it that's an in-town cell phone.
The wonders of the cell phone.
Because I knew you were from Forsyth County, and I don't think there's a lot of 404s in the Forsyth County.
No, I think last time we talked, I was calling from my home phone, and it cut off, and it was a home phone. So now we'll try the cell phone, see if it's more reliable than my home phone.
Excellent. Well, John, since we last talked to you, you had the successful event up in the north part of Georgia, the For the People rally, and now you've started a new project drafting White Gore. Tell me about that.
Well, it's funny because the last time we talked, it was you asked the question, what was next? And at the time, I had no idea that it would be starting a draft effort to get someone into the United States Senate race. So I guess that answers the question. That's drafting White Gore into the race. So we started last Friday night, and in 1 week we've had, I think it's just around 230 people in 57 counties sign a petition urging White Gore to enter the U.S. Senate race.
Yes, and where can people view that petition?
The website is wewantwyke.com.
And Wyke is W-Y-C.
That's correct.
Yes.
So you say you have 57 counties? That's a whole lot.
Right.
Out of 159. That's a lot.
To give it a little bit of perspective, it was a web-only driven, so it was internet-driven, very viral. And we've had someone in a third of the Georgia counties sign the petition. And what I like to tell everybody is that the folks that are signing that petition are not people who are just John PQ voter that goes and votes for Democrats. It's people at a local level who are involved in Democratic politics at the county level. So these are activists, people who make things happen in a county. And we've got folks in nearly a third of Georgia.
Yes. Well, John, tell us what prompted this, prompted you to do this.
Well, Wyke, being from North Georgia, Wyke is somewhat of a fixture up here. He's a very successful trial attorney. He's a former legislator in the House in the late 80s and early 90s. And over the last 2 years or so, he's made a real concerted effort. As Democrats look to rebuild the infrastructure of the party in North Georgia, he's made a real concerted effort to come to all of the different counties to help, to come and speak to us about our common heritage in Georgia, what Democrats have done in Georgia, the good things that we've accomplished. So he's been very helpful to a lot of North Georgia counties as he's traveled around. And as you look at the current slate of candidates that we have, there's just a huge vacuum in terms of a candidate that can articulate what the values of the Democratic Party are. No one can do that that's in the race today. And if we're talking about a U.S. Senate race, and in particular a primary to choose the Democratic representative in that U.S. Senate race, it just seemed to me that White was the guy for the job. So we put up the petition, we put up a pretty quick site that looks great, has some help from friends, and it's really taken off.
Yeah.
Well, could I jump in with an obvious question?
Sure.
Has White Gore himself made any comment about all of this?
Yes, and I think that we've given him something to think about. There, about oh goodness, I think it was Friday, Thursday or Friday, the Gainesville Times and Access North Georgia both ran news stories that quoted Wyke as saying that he hadn't given it much thought before the draft effort, but now he's considering it. He wants to speak with his family. And, you know, Tim, at that point it was the regular candidate non-answer. But I know that he's considering the race now.
Good.
Yes. Well, is there any timeline on the movement?
No. I mean, it's very simple for someone to go up and sign the petition. I think, you know, if folks are trying to get a sense of what I think comes next is that we've pushed the online form of draft Wyke for U.S. Senate, and now I think they'll start to see that move into offline activity. And I won't go a lot into it, but, you know, we're going to think about ways that we can continue to heighten the visibility of the movement to get WIKE to run. So we'll see where it goes. I don't know.
This would be the first time in Georgia that there's been a draft movement for a candidate using the internet, correct?
I would think that was correct. And, you know, drafting candidates, as far as this goes, has been pretty new in general. I think Wes Clark was one that
kind of
did this.
And Jim Webb, I just add that, you know, one of the insurgent and successful campaigns last cycle was from Senator Jim Webb in Virginia, and that started as a draft effort from the local net roots in Raising Cane and a weblog that was there in Virginia. So that to me is kind of, I look at them as the role model in terms of drafting folks to run for Senate.
Yes, well, as far as the, you know, the insiders, people in Atlanta, maybe people that served with him in the House, what's been the reaction, or do you know the reaction of folks in that, you know, domain or area?
Well, I mean, you know, mostly it's anecdotal, right? I mean, I don't have numbers to throw at you, but
no.
But I think that I have yet to find anyone, and I mean that very literally, anyone who has something negative to say about WIKE and his service. I mean, I just can't find it. And that's because generally he's very loyal. He's very fiery. He gives probably one of the best stump speeches I've ever seen. It's just difficult to find someone who's not inspired or moved by WIKE. So if you're going out to try and, you know, get the general input, it's all very positive. The petition, so, you know, I've used the example, former Representative Lee Howe signed the petition out of nowhere. We didn't, we haven't approached any of the legislators or former legislators about signing the petition, but out of nowhere he shows up on it. So I think that it shows that there is some establishment support for his campaign.
There was a judge also. I was looking through the petition today. I think I saw a judge on it also.
There's a senior court judge out of Fulton County on the list.
So when we say 57 counties, this means that he actually has the potential to have someone in 57 counties, bam, as soon as his race starts, that can help propel him throughout the rest of that county.
Yeah, one thing that we've tried to do is keep it open and transparent, right? Because I want everybody to know what we're up to. I'm not trying to hide anything from anybody. And the value of that is that everybody can see who signed up to support WIKE. And it really does give, I think, and I hope that it is something that's positive, if he thinks about a candidacy, is that it might take a campaign a good bit of time to find volunteers in a third of Georgia. And we're not really talking just a third of Georgia. We're talking about geographically. But, of course, voter concentration is much larger than a third. And it's hard to find 230-some volunteers or folks that support your candidacy in a week. And that's hard. But that's what's happened with the draft movement.
Yes, and just looking at the Senate race, and I look at your map, and it's just incredible. You have, if somebody entered Georgia at Heard County, they could go all the way across out the eastern border, out like near Lake Hartwell, and you know, be in your blue counties that are covered, which is quite impressive. But in the southern end of Georgia, very little coverage. But then if you think about the other candidates, Del Cardwell, Vernon Jones, both from DeKalb County, Rand Knight from the Atlanta area, I believe Cobb, all the candidates are in North Georgia, no one in South Georgia. What do you think that that's going to mean to, do you believe WIKE Gore could, you know, capture some of the South Georgia vote just because he's not from Metro Atlanta?
Two things. One, recognize generally that we've got some coverage in like Chatham, right, so down in the Savannah area. In the rural parts of Georgia, understand the petition's been going on for a week and it's mostly been internet-driven.
Yeah.
So, and you know, most of the blog world or how they would hear about this is, you know, pretty much on the northern end of the state. So there hasn't been much drive to inform people down there. So, you know, I don't know that that speaks a whole lot to the coverage.
But isn't WIKE from South Georgia?
Well, and that was my second point, is that WIKE was born in Tifton. Tift County.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's any question that if this ever got any real legs in terms of a real candidacy by WIKE Gore, he's the only candidate that I know of that actually has roots in South Georgia, that has friends and family and everything else down there in the south end of the state and would be able to play there. So the fact that the petition hasn't gotten folks in, you know, southwest Georgia, well, it's no surprise it's southwest Georgia. But Wyke's got roots in that area, and I think that would help him.
Yes. Well, in southwest Georgia, you know, obviously they can produce candidates because both of our gubernatorial candidates last time were from southwest Georgia. And not that that's just the key to winning. It's just an observation, and it does. I mean, I would think that some South Georgia voters, if they saw a guy they liked that was in Gainesville as opposed to directly in Metro Atlanta, some people may think that is a positive.
Absolutely, there is no doubt that Wyke is not going to be a Metro Atlanta candidate. You know, that's just not what Wyke. I don't think, and you know, I don't speak for him. Let's be clear. But I don't. If you talk to Wyke, I don't think he would characterize himself as a Metro Atlanta candidate. I think
he's not. That's
he's
what.
A
that's
more
what
Georgia
saying.
Guy. Right. Well, so I think there's probably some appeal at that level, right, in the south part of the state.
Yes. Well, John, I want you to keep us updated on the movement, and go ahead and stay on the line. I'm going to let Tim go ahead and do his outrage of the week, and if there's any moments after that. Some of us may want to respond to what Tim's outrage of the week is. Tim, if you'll go ahead.
Okay, David. Like most political people, I watch every Talking Heads program that I can watch. And I've always been especially fond of one on Sunday mornings that deals with a lot of politics in our own state. But I'm not too fond of this show anymore. In the past, this show was presented in a nonpartisan, balanced fashion. All sides were heard, not now. This very morning, the panel on this show, made up of almost all Republicans, could barely contain their glee about the result in the 10th congressional election. And they bragged about the Iraq War. And they bragged about Representative Jacobs switching parties. And they went on to explain that immigration is the big issue, and they just went on, blah, blah, blah. You know what I saw this morning? Not the informed show on Georgia politics that I used to see. Instead, I saw a pack of grinning Republican jackals bragging about, among other things, a war that has produced nothing lasting except body bags. These so-called journalists should be ashamed of themselves. To you folks on this show, you go ahead and you score your little political points while you sit there in that studio with no one to debate you. And while you're at it, as far as I'm concerned, you can take a hike. It's time someone called this bunch exactly what they now are, a mouthpiece for the state Republican Party. But you know what, David? I just did.
Yes, and it is high time. It had been getting worse since Bill Schiff hadn't been on the show, but the Georgia gang this morning, that new lady, Stephanie Rapage, I think it was Rampage, that's what it looked like. You know, Dick Williams, she sits in the liberal chair, supposedly, and Dick Williams openly says, no, you're on our side, or he's on our side, you know, like it's a team sport. Which politics is, but, you know, usually you have to have two teams to call it a sport.
I heard the same thing you did, and that is eerily prescient, because I do recall Dick Williams, what they were doing was talking about a soldier that was in Iraq from Athens who is a blogger.
Yes.
And Dick Williams looked at all the people on the panel and said, he's on our team, right? And they all kind of went, yeah, he's on our team.
Yes. And the show's coming close real quick, but I want to tell you, it is a sad day on the Georgia gang when Martha Zoller at times might be the most Democratic. I mean, that's just downright scary. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if anybody in the Georgia gang listens, but I have a feeling that any of the four of us would be willing to come on their show to give them a Democratic voice since they've apparently moved Alexis Scott off at some time. But I enjoyed having y'all. Thought it was another great show, and we're back next Sunday at 7:00.
Talk to you. Good night.
Night.